we're back for another episode of Counterpoints, and this one is an easy one because I know where we start on this one. In theory, remember, we're supposed to start with like a hot take and a big thing and all the rest of it. I actually think the hot take shouldn't even be a hot take. Funny thing is, Pimp, one thing people don't realise about me is the reason I actually do brag about predictions I've made is because I actually don't make that many predictions. A lot of people wouldn't know this. Like, I don't actually do the thing a lot of people, even fans, do. Like, if, for example, if someone like Azimu was number one in 2019, I don't go, wow, he's going to be number one for like 6 or 7 years, because actually things are insanely hard to predict. You know, you never know what happens in sports, what happens with people's motivation. There's a million factors can affect things that are. So actually, even though people will assume I'm doing it like as if I did like a... You know, the angle where on the desk you say one thing, but then before you said something on Twitter, and then you pick whichever one's right to be like, I remember. Because I'm not, because really, if you think about it, right, when I brag, I'm not really predicting that, like, I can see the future. I'm not pretending to be psychic. What I'm trying to say is, like, I just saw something. If you notice my big things, the eye test, I saw something that maybe people missed. So actually, what's funny is my hot take is I'm just going to rerun last year, mate. There's a hot take for you. No one in the history of professional Counter-Strike ever did an insanely dominant year and then just did another insanely dominant year. Because I'll remind everyone, before they go, Darren, what about Astralis? You do realize it was only winning those two majors. I know that sounds mad. That made them the team of the year. If they hadn't won those two majors, Team Liquid probably would have been the team of the year. Over aggregate, they had loads of top fours. They obviously won the six events in a row. They had the Grand Slam, etc. Whereas people will remember, there was that period of time where Astralis, like, 3 or 4 months didn't even make a final, which is irrelevant in that sense. Then even after they were winning at the end of the year, people started to chip back at that. You had the EGs and the Mouses coming in, you know, with a winning like one out of every two or three events. When then Fnatic was right. So it was, people forget 2019, much more scuffed year. If anything, I view that one in a way. I have another theory about great teams, which is that when you're an all-time great team, you have the period where you're dominant. Usually that's pretty early on, probably the first thirds or half of your time. See what happened with Vitality last year. Then what you do at the end is people have put all their energy into you. They have figured out some of the things you do. People probably have even copied your style. And what happens is you sort of don't win like 3-4 events in a row. You sort of steal them here and there, or you have the day where things go awesome and you still win. And my whole thing with that is, like, it's a bit like someone like Djokovic in tennis now. It's like, if you can get even one or two more on the way out the door, that denies your rivals. It makes you seem even greater, even though you know you're not at your peak of your power. So I'll just say this, Pip. My hot take is, I actually think Vitality, this is why I predicted after Blast Bounty, they just come and win this tournament. I even had a tweet, mate, where I said they probably won't even need more than four maps in the final. That was actually my take. So what I did last year, if people don't know, is after they'd only won Katowice, the first land they'd won, and the, I think it was Blast right afterwards or something. I think it was two tournaments like that in a row. I already said something like, this could just be like the best team to ever play Counter-Strike. This is fucking nuts. I actually think the same thing, mate. When I watch them this year win this tournament, I'm like, aside from things like, oh, but no one in history has done it, and oh, they've been together for a while. That, if we just take that out of the way, if I just showed you this team, mate, with no nameplates, you'd go, why wouldn't this team just win every tournament this year? Like, they should. You look at them like, there's just so few flaws on them. Like, there's my hot take. You think Vitality just dominates all this year too, despite all the cool storylines, all the donk, all the, I don't think it matters, but I think they just win almost everything this year.
See, I think you need to get a credit for that, because I think that's an extremely hot take, because as you said, like, it's never been done in no, history of Counter-Strike, and people, I see it all over the, you know, all over where I come, you know, I obviously I'm involved in cycling a lot, you know, and whenever you have someone dominate in cycling, everyone goes per default, yeah, he's got to win everything the next 10 years, you know,
right.
No reason to watch it anymore. Same goes in football, you know, you have a team like, I don't know, when Real Madrid were in their peak, right, with Mourinho, when they won a couple of leagues 2 seasons in a row, everyone just expects that that's going to happen for the next 5 years. I think that's insanely hard to replicate.
Absolutely.
And it's even though that history tells us different every single time, we still go per default to have that notion. And I think, yes, a lot of people would tend to agree with you because they have that default line of thought. So I think, as I dissect what you're saying, right, I think that's an extremely hot take, because personally I don't think that's going to happen.
Ooh,
you know,
and, okay,
and the base reason, because I basically agree with everything you're saying. I think Vitality is suited for it. I think they have the team composition for it. I think one of the biggest, you know, pitfalls of teams not being able to replicate, you know, that for years and years and years to come is personalities develop, and some players get an ego, you know, or some players get fed up with winning, or some players start to slack a little bit. And I don't know what it is, but I feel like, you know, from knowing some of the personalities within Vitality, they don't strike me as personalities that let loose, you know, or as personalities that develop this big ego where it gets out of control or they get lazy, you know. Whereas if I were to be completely honest, you know, hindsight 2020, look at the Astralis 2019 lineup, I would feel pretty comfortable saying that I know these guys and I know a few of them probably would have a tendency to slack a little bit or be a bit lazy, sure, or whatever that may be, right? I don't see the same thing for Vitality. So I think in terms of summarizing that, I think Vitality is probably the best bet we ever had of a team that could do that for 2 years in a row. But I think it's such an extreme task to do today compared to 2019, because it's always a tough exercise to do. But I feel when Astralis were dominating, Liquid were the biggest competitor. Yeah, you had Na'Vi as well in the mix with Simple, but I didn't see 3, 4, 5, 7, maybe 8 teams that occasionally could steal away a tournament as I theoretically do today. I think, you know, we cannot discredit that Na'Vi figures out their shit, you know, and become a team that maybe doesn't, sure, win a lot of tournaments, but get into it. I think Furia right now is extremely strong. You know where I stand on Falcons as well. It's a question of time before they rack up trophies. I think the competition for Vitality to repeat this year is so much harder than what Astralis had to overcome back in 2020 for that to happen. So I think based on, you know, history, based on gut feeling, you know what I'm saying, that's not going to happen. But I will agree with you in the sense that I don't think there's ever been a sampled team or there's ever been a better case than Vitality for that to be successful with that task. But it just, from my experience in basically any competitive sport that I've seen and I follow and whatnot, it seems so hard to replicate. And, you know, then you compare it to football, you compare it to the NFL, to whatever. People always forget that Counter-Strike is a very small team. It's 5 players. And if one player fuck up,
yes, that's
if
true.
One player develops an ego, if one player starts slacking, like that can throw off the entire team. It's not like a football team where you have a squad of 25 players where your lead striker all of a sudden becomes a lazy fuck and then you just replace him with another great guy. You know, it's not really the same thing. So I think you're much more walking on a thin line here. And I don't know. I would love to see it from Vitality, but if I were to, you know, put a gun to my head right now, I'd say that's not going to happen. They're not going to have another year like last year. That would be unreal, basically.
Because, I mean, there's even a few details I'll feed in, which is one of my theories when I watched, especially Astralis, stay on top, is I always, here's the thing, mate, I'm very careful with the language I use. Like, notice I didn't say when Astralis were on top. I said, stay on top, because I always think the most underrated thing that fans do is, I don't know if it's, I've always had a theory, maybe it's because, like, people play video games like FIFA and, you know, World of Warcraft, where you have these set levels, and if they go up, you know, like, the levels on the screen, and you'll always be that level. Like, in a game, if you pick something in TFT, at a certain level in the game, it always does the same damage. You know, like these things are routine. And I feel like it makes people forget that when you're playing a team game like Counter-Strike, you, even if on paper you look and they have a win, you know, we'll give the Astralis example, they have the win streak on Inferno and Nuke, right? Guys, do you really just believe they had a playbook on Inferno and Nuke from day one that the win streak began, and it wasn't until they lost to Ents that someone figured out the playbook? No, the whole time, you had the absolute best minds in Counter-Strike. Look, I know this sounds like it's aged badly now because of what happened to him since then, but that guy Zeus in Team Liquid, when he was their coach, I used to talk to him all the time, mate. The reason he wouldn't stop those maps is they were Team Liquid's best maps, so the whole time he was just figuring out, like, is there like a crack that's like I can sort of exploit against Astralis? Like, if it works against every other team, there's got to be something we could do. There's got to be some angle we can find. And then the idea was you'd constantly be studying their demos and updating yours and finding the counter flashes and looking for the patterns and things like that. And I always used to say what people will never give Glaive and Zonic and the Astralis guys full credit for is they did what I've never seen any team in history do, which is normally you get on top. See, you know, different states. You get on top, you win, you're the best. Then everyone puts like all their weapons and all their fucking telescopes towards you and studies everything you do. And you do start to get cracks and holes appear. And then what happens is you lose a couple of times. And then that's what spurs you to be like, right, they beat us this way. Good. We can fix this. We come back. We do a revenge game. Suddenly we're back on top again. It's a back and forth. They never did that, bro. What would happen is they would just be winning. And then it's like they themselves didn't wait for the other team to figure out a solution, didn't wait for the car. They were just like, actually, you know what? Even though we already win all the time, and look, here's a new thing we're going to throw in there. Here's a new wrinkle that we're going to do in the game. Here's a new angle. We're just going to update our playbook ourselves. Like, we're going to stay ahead of everyone. And I always thought that's the reason they were able to dominate. Like, I know the rest of it looks beautiful. The ratings are all good on HLTV, the style of play. By the way, the real reason why no one gives Vitality the credit over fucking Astralis is Astralis had that Roger Federer thing, didn't they? They just beautifully moved around the map and interacted with each other like they were telepathic. tactic, and then every person somehow, even though I've seen him in other teams, mate, they didn't always do this. Suddenly Magus could make the perfect read at the same time that like Zipnik's held the right angle and the device was just flowing over here with the orb, and you'd watch it and you'd just be like, that should be the best team ever, mate. This is unbelievable. So one of the other things is I think Vitality has a bit of that in them too, a pimp actually. Because first of all, they have managed to do things that I think are impossible. Like this stat that Chad's brought up of their win record on Dust 2 is mind-blowing, mate. Dust 2, every version of that game, I don't give a fuck what people think about the map, whether they like it or not. Every version of Dust 2 defaults to becoming like quite superstar dependent, actually. If you have a superstar AWPer that does so much work, if you have an insane rifle on the T side, like Donk on Spirit, you're going to do so many things. Yeah, there's certainly more tactics in the rework than the old, really old school version where it was just Shox and Nico just sitting in the middle of the map, just doing whatever they wanted to drop in 30 bombs. But still, it's one of the hardest maps, I think, ever to have like an 80 to 90% win rate on. That's the map where classically you can have like a 75%, even if you're the best team in the world. So one, they're already doing that on some of the maps. And bro, a lot of people missed this. There was an interview done, as is always the case with the French broadcast, I think it was, like those croissant strike guys of Nell and all those people. They did an interview with Stars and Apex, and they asked about this thing where, if you remember, when they played against Aurora, to not have to play Anubis, they just banned the Anubis themselves and left the Ancient open, and they had that giga overtime, get the three overtime games, which everyone watched, and they were like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, you almost lost that. And it's like, I can tell the last episode, but they didn't though. They won it, and they clearly did that. This is what they revealed in this interview, to seed the idea that in the future, if you're a team that either is like a specialist on Anubis, or you're just going to ban out with us too, for example, then we might pick it. And they even said, basically, in the best of threes, it's whatever. Like, they obviously just did it there to try and test it against Aurora, but they basically said it's four best of fives, because they know that when they go to a best of five, like this one in the final here, if someone is just going to ban their Dust 2, they don't want it to be that it's like, fuck, now we have to ban the Ancient, we have to play like Anubis or whatever, or whatever it would be. I know in this case they didn't actually do it, but they're setting it up that in the future, yeah. Like, bro, think about what they're doing there, Pimp. They're doing what we've even just said you can't do, what fans can't do, which is they're already thinking about future best of five, not even this one, future best of fives that haven't happened, but like when it happens, here's what we're going to do, here's our angle to still get an edge on someone and to not like make our veto of it. Bro, that is fucking like, that's so, like, it only looks stupid if you don't win any of the events. So yeah, if you lose every event now and you make a file, you look like an idiot. But if that actually works out, that's like the sort of story you put in a documentary, mate. That's genius. That actually shows that you almost are trying to just be the greatest team of all time. You like figure out what are the last little areas where we could even get caught and lose. Because listen, player performance is one thing. Yeah, you can have matches like where Zee who didn't turn up in the final of the major order. Yeah, that can happen. You still won anyway, by the way. I'd even say that's a great sign of all the best teams ever. But things like this, these are the small things that other people aren't even thinking about that, man. No one in Falcons is thinking about that shit. No one in Fury is. They're just trying to figure out the day-to-day. Like, how do we even get to the top?
Yeah, I think that's a great example, because that's the luxury of being, you know, dominating the circuit as it is right now. And you're probably right in a lot of teams. Let's say that Falcons were in that position. Let's say Furia, you know, were the best team in the world. It's likely to think that they wouldn't think that far ahead, but it's also like when you describe it like you do, it's the luxury of being as dominant as you have been. You know, it's the luxury of being able to, I wouldn't say, you know, risk more, but downplay the effect of a potential loss versus Aurora in that game. You know, and not a lot of teams are willing to do that, because it's such a fine edge all the time that if you lose one game like Furia, you lose that one game at the major, and all of a sudden the entire narrative around Furia changes from that quarterfinal loss versus Na'Vi, right? For Vitality, we said it multiple times, like even if they didn't win Krakow, or even if they come into Klushner Poker and they don't win, like the narrative around Vitality is not going to change based on one or two tournaments, whereas the narrative for everyone else right now is constantly changing based on the last performance. So you are in a unique position where you can take advantage of that, and I think you deserve the credit for doing it. I think it's a great example that you put up here, right? Because I do think there is a lot of teams that wouldn't be using that luxury position that they're in right now. So I think that's another, you know, another case and another angle as to why I tend to agree with the sentiment that I think if any team ever were able to do it, it would be Vitality.
Sure.
But I also can't help to think now that you're speaking about it, like, by saying Vitality are going to dominate or having another season like last season, you're also sort of, you know, banking off the fact that Donk and Spirit doesn't figure it out.
That's true.
Or he's not able to get it over the finish line. Yep. You're also saying that Furia, you know, is not going to beat them in a lot of grand finals, if any. You're also saying that Falcons is irrelevant in that equation. And the way I think, at least around it, is that I don't want to take anything away from Vitality, but I think there's too many competitive teams around them, too many competitive players. There's a Donk, you know, that is uncontrollable on his best day. I think there's too many too many potential fall groups for Vitality to fall into, not based on their own performance, their own attitude, or them developing egos and all that kind of stuff that usually would be my go-to reason for not believing it, but more so that I think the rest of the scene is competitive enough in order to figure out a way to beat Vitality. Another thing I do want to say as well, and that's what makes it even more impressive to me, is like, you remember when Heroic were, you know, doing the online days with Gambit, and they were like sort of the best team in the world together with Gambit. Yeah. They're like duking out 1 and 2. And even when Heroic were the favorite to win, they were technically the favorites to win the Paris Major, if I'm not mistaken, heading into it. It's not Vitality dominated coming into Paris Major. People forget that. They won it, you know, they won it clear and obvious, but the 3 months leading up to it, most people had Heroic winning that major. That was their supposed to win. They kind of defined an era of playing Counter-Strike. They developed this proactive style, you know, that everyone tried to copy. Everyone agreed that that was the way to play Counter-Strike. Heroic's problem back then was that they didn't have the best talent in order to execute it. Like, they made a team that was supposed to be maybe the 7th, 8th, 9th best in the world. They made them the best or the second or the third best team in the world, which is crazy. And that was like them developing a new way of approaching Counter-Strike, a new meta, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if you agree with that. I don't feel Vitality have done any, you know, cultural impact, you know, in that sense, where they developed a new way of approaching Counter-Strike. They basically took what we knew as quality Counter-Strike and they perfected it, right? Yes. They put the right players in the right positions. They signed Rups because it made sense. They enable Cyru. They enable a guy like FlameC. You have Apex, you know, getting better and better at his role. You have Messi growing into his role and becoming more and more impactful. It's not like they are developing a new style of Counter-Strike or they're coming with something extraordinary. And again, it's not to downplay what they're doing, because I'm sure internally they work with the finer details and the small margins. And I'm sure Apex would be able to tell us plenty of things where he feels like, yeah, we developed this or we perfected this. But that's the whole point of my story right here, is that it just feels like they took what we know is quality Counter-Strike and they perfected it, right? It's like when you compare it to football players. Instead of doing the crazy flicks, the crazy, you know, moves in a 1v1 scenario, you just make sure that your first touch is the best first touch you can possibly have every single time. You make sure that the passing to a teammate is spot on every single time. Instead of having the flashy moves, the flashing finishes, the crazy tactics, you know, where you all of a sudden deploy a new midfield or you deploy a new formation in the middle of the game, they just do everything and they do the basics to the highest degree possible. And I also think that speaks into your example with Dust2, because if anything, I agree with you. Dust2 is a map where, historically speaking, it allows individuals to sometimes take over the game, and it is probably one of the toughest maps to stay consistent on. But the reason being is, and that's from my player experience, and I don't think that's changed, and I think everyone would agree with that as well, the best way to get good at Dust 2 is by doing the basics at a very high level. Map control, take cat control, do your A execute, do your B execute. It's all in the detail. It's all about how you use your utility, how you do your timings, and how you make sure you take cat control without taking any unnecessary risk with your utility. And there's like a, let's say there's 100 steps, you know, in order to end up in an A execute on Dust 2. But if you master every single step to the smallest detail, odds of something going wrong is at an all-time low. And I think that's why Vitality are dominating Dust 2, because everything they do is sort of mastered to the finest detail. It's not the crazy pass. It's not the Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, crossing the ball 60 meters in a crazy flick. It's just the simple things they do to a very high level, and they do it consistently. And that's not, you know, that's not the most sexy way of all of a sudden becoming the most dominating team ever, but it's probably the hardest way of doing it.
No, by the way, I definitely agree. I always tell people, if I have to pick one thing about their team that I think makes them the best, is I think they just have nailed all the traditional roles in Counter-Strike. It's funny, everyone does that thing where they call you a role cell if you believe roles exist. Like, I think they're a great example of how they do. Like, it's why I said also, for the Falcons example, if they can ever actually win trophies, I think you've almost invented a new style of how T-sides play. Those roles don't even make sense to me. The players look great on paper, but how do you make it work? Again, what formation would you be playing in this world? You know, how does the dynamic work? The difference is in Vitality, I agree, they haven't invented anything, but I tell you what, they have taken it to an unbelievable degree that no one else can match, even with the classic setup. All right, I tell you what, we won't make the whole episode obviously about will Vitality dominate the season. That's just some future shit anyway. We'll segue into talking about some of the things with Vitality. So I'll tell you another thing about the makeup of their team, and it was on display in this tournament, is if you think of those two major finals last year, where bizarrely you had this situation when the first one, it was Apex and Mezzi that went crazy when Zee was kind of off in the final, and then the second one, Rops was unbelievable, and then Mezzi also put in another like crazy performance that was kind of unexpected. Another thing about their team is this, bro. I've always said, one of the things about all the roles that's mad underrated is, if in theory not all the time, but on like on occasion, each person from each role can sort of do something better than expected. Like famously, people might remember, there was the IM Beijing where the reason Glaive got to be MVP is he did numbers that don't even make sense for an IG. Like, what? That's a fucking mind blowing. Obviously, there was even a time when Zipnix had an insane, like essentially everyone had their moments in teams like Astralis. And the reason that's so OP is when I'm watching people like Donk or back in the day, my boy Simple, how rare is it that these guys ever get their ass saved, mate? Normally, they have to not only be the ones like carrying the game, but almost every time they lose, you just know they probably dropped like a 40 bomb and lost. Like you just go on and go, holy fuck, he's in hell. This guy, he's elo hell. Do you do that line all the time? When, like, one of the reasons it was cool to see Ziwu actually just completely take over this, I think it was his best final he's ever played, mate. The whole thing from beginning to end was unbelievable. Like he actually did, he even did all the shit, mate, that I normally criticize him for. Like, you start a bit slow or you shy away from the opposite. Mate, he just did none of that. This was like, I was fucking piloting him. Like, he did all the things I want, all the aggressive peaks. He went for the AWP all the time. He was playing super fucking ballsy. He hit every shot, like you'd imagine. It was beautiful to watch. That's the thing about their team as well, mate, is. And also, this was the final when Flames remembered he could be really good and carried the first couple of maps. They almost even won the Mirage because of him. Like, you watch their team. Again, it isn't really just the Ziwu show. Certainly, his numbers will always be the best. But what's beautiful is not only can he get saved, but if he ever does turn up like this, good luck ever beating him, mate. Like, this is one of those finals where certainly we'll talk on the other side about Molodoy. He didn't have his greatest fight. But I'll tell you what, mate, a lot of people would have got their shit pushed into that one. Even when I was watching some of the Ziwu POV moments, like, there's just the ones where, a bit like Simple, they hit the shots, you're just like, congrats, like, what can I do to that? Like, there's certain shots in the game. But it's with Pimp. As a Liverpool fan, we complain like motherfuckers about that 2022 Real Madrid one where it was Vinicius Junior and all that. You know, the defence was a bit dodgy with Trent. So nobody I know who's a Liverpool fan has ever complained about the Real Madrid final where Gareth Bale scored that overhead kick into, like, the top fucking corner. Because when they do that, mate, you just go, you know what, we can't do that. You win. You just win that one, mate. You get, that's just too good. You get to win that one. Nobody's going, but what if? No, there's no what if. Like, that's just too good. So if I was even the other teammate, I actually would sort of low-key be like, I know we're not supposed to be like, it's fine to lose, but it's like, but how do you beat that? How do you beat someone, Pimp, who's not playing some shit role baiting? They're actually the star and they get 90 kills and then die 40 something times over four maps. Like, that's just the recipe for a win against anyone. So I watched their team also. Oh, fucking hell, this is I can't even tell which the peak of Vitality is, but this one was pretty fucking scary, mate.
Yeah, that's true. It was a scary one, and you can beat them. And I think it's a great notion in the sense that players, and you'll hear that, you know, from players themselves in interviews, the first thing they always say is that, yeah, we should have won this had not been for XYZ. Always, and that's fair enough, you know, I used to do it myself as well, but everyone always believes that, yeah, we fucked up, and then, yeah, sure, they played well as well. This time around, I'm sure Furia felt the same thing as you do, you know, yeah, we could have done better, and yeah, Molodoy probably should have done more, could have done more, but that wouldn't perhaps change the outcome of the game. It would have made it slightly more competitive. Who knows if we got a fifth map, but I think overall the sentiment is that, listen, we lost to a significantly better team than us today. And it takes a lot for players to admit that, but if there's even a small, you know, and that's one for the fans out there, if you ever hear a player just giving more credit to the opponents before they start talking about their own mistakes, if there's a small sense of that, you know, or a small smell of that, then you know for sure that that's how they felt on the server, because they never want to say it. They never want to admit it to themselves. They always want to believe that, yeah, I had this outcome of this game in my own hands. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I should have done that. We could have won, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a great, you know, little note for fans, at least to keep an eye out for, that when you hear in interviews the players are acknowledging the other team played well, there's obviously different ways of doing that, but in a sense that's also them capitulating and saying, as you said, you know, whenever you see the Gareth Bale overhead kick, you know, and whenever you face a team that just demolishes you, sometimes you just face a better team, you know, and even certain players of the highest status in this game will admit that from time to time. To answer your question, how do you beat Vitality? You probably can't in this, you know, in this shape, let's be honest, especially when Saibu's playing like that. But I'll also say, you know, this was Saibu's best tournament ever, I'd say, you know, at least at a prestigious event like this, where he truly dominated from start to finish, whether that was the group stage, in the grand final, you name it. you know, that being his best ever, that's not going to be the standard of Saivu. Like, again, you see fans on Twitter now talking about, that's why Saivu is the best player in the world. That's sure. why it was never a discussion with Donk.
Sure.
Well, like, shut the fuck up. This was the first time he ever had a Donk-esque event. Like, yeah. the first time ever. He's been around for 5 years. So if you expect Saivu to do this, you know, or a level like this, at every, so you've been critiquing him for 4.5 years now because he didn't do it? Or is that the standard that we expect, right?
Bro, like, what they don't seem to get is, mate, if he did this every tournament, I'd probably think he was the GOAT. Like, you know what the GOAT, what more do you need to do? Stuff like that. If you do that, I'll say you're the GOAT, man. That's pretty thick. It's pretty good.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's like, again, that's like a mental gymnastics that people go through. So I don't think there's a way of beating Vitality in the current sense of the game now. You'd have to see something crazy come out from, you know, from Furia. A Molodoy that is matching Saivu's level in this game. Who knows if that becomes a competitive game, or Furia then, you know, etches it out. Who knows if Donk and Spirit figures it out, or Falcons figure, like, it requires something extraordinary. So for now, if anything, I just want to, you know, tip my hat. And as I said, you know, to close on the topic of Vitality, for me at least, I think this is the tournament, this is the game where I'm leaning towards them now. You know, if you were to ask me which is the greatest Counter-Strike team ever to be assembled, I'd say Vitality now. I think the only thing that Astralis had over them was that they had like a 14-month, 15-month period. You know, we talk about calendar years in Counter-Strike, but they had like 14, 15 months where they were dominating, where they were getting into the finals, they were winning the big trophies, and then they had a pretty steep fall-off. Vitality haven't had that now, and they've been good for 15 months now. So the one argument I could produce for Astralis to still say that they were maybe better, you know, I think that's gone now. I think winning Krakow right here, you know, let's see if they win Cluj-Napoca, they win Atlanta, you know, given on the team list that just came out as well, it seems likely. We're talking another Grand Slam potentially for Vitality. We're talking, you know, a player with three Grand Slams. It's just going to be a different story at this point. So I will say this. I think Vitality will go down in history as the greatest Counter-Strike team ever to be assembled. I'm just not sure whether or not they're going to continue at this level for another 9 months. I would love to see it, but I highly doubt it.
All right, let's transition then. The obvious team we can talk about is Furia. They were there in the finals. What's funny is, even despite all of that, there was a real world where they could have gotten to the fifth map to that Anubis. It would have been a crazy, you know, fucking roll the dice. Who knows who wins this one, right? I'll go on the other side, Pimp. In the same way as in that final, I do watch it, and if I'm Furia, I go, well, what are we supposed to do against Zewu if he does that, man? Like, that's just unbelievable. Yeah. At the same time, though, an obvious person that did underperform was Molodoy. Like, Molodoy was, like, good on the first map, and then I don't think people realise how bad his drop-off on the other three was. On the other three maps combined, he had 27 kills. And here's what's funny, right? I'm actually going to give him like a mild compliment, even though, yes, I think this is actually one of the most ass finals I've seen him play, which is, I'll tell you what, mate, here's what I actually like about this kid. He never actually stops going for it, mate. Like, what was crazy is, first of all, he is one of those people who doesn't do any of that fucking Zewu, like, I also like Zewu, right? No, he just goes for the AWP every single time, Pimp. I literally, in this final, saw him buy multiple pure glass cannon AWPs, like, just buy the AWP, no armor. There was times he had the AWP, just no head armor. Like, this guy will just go straight into, he's never the guy doing that whole, like, you know, I better get, like, the MP9 with a couple of flashes and a smoke and then play it, and then we have to, like, farm the kills and then I can get the AWP again. Or, like, oh, guys, does anyone have 7Ks? They can drop. He just gets the op, mate. He just goes straight to it, which tells me he knows what his fucking job in this team is, mate. And as people saw in the rest of the tournament, he was fucking playing some great AWP rounds. He was doing some of that shit, like, everyone's gonna remember that Mirage round that's like iconic now, where all those players like bomb rushing him, and he's just doing the most godlike CSDM shit that we all dream we could do in a match, but then when we load into the match, none of that shit hits. But in the CSDM, we're all fucking simple, hitting all the no scopes and stuff. So he was fucking sick. But the problem is, mate, this guy is, what I appreciate is he never shies away from it. Like, he still went for all the shots. He still tried to make the players that you probably need him to make. He didn't make any of them. Sadly, I think it was a massive off day. Like, he looked really bad on some of these maps. Like, he even straight whiffed, mate. One of the things also about Molodoy is, one of the things I think everyone loves is he has that Monacy-esque super quick firing speed. So it makes you feel like, oh, fuck, so hard to beat. So, well, I'll tell you what, when they miss, as any Torsi fan will tell you, you get your ass handed to you, mate. That's a really difficult style to play. It's the reason why AWPers tend to be a little bit more conservative. So, like, I'm not saying this to flame him. I know he's actually had his moments where, unfortunately, because Furia fans pushed him too high up, then it looks again like we're just shitting on him. I do think he's a mega player, mate. He's definitely one of the best to watch in the game, like, as an impact player. But I think this final, this will be the one that you either have to learn from or delete it from your brain, because this was not a good final. Like, I think this, unfortunately, that would be one of my reasons I as to why Fury didn't win this event.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think he's, again, it speaks naturally into the development of what Molodoy is and what he's supposed to be. I think he's only going to get better, you know, and I think he's a player that that has the potential to enter the conversation to be a top three player in the world, but he's not there yet. You know, I think it's unfair to label him as inconsistent, but I think throughout Krakow, you saw a bit of that inconsistency. You know, as you said, the style that he's playing with as well. It was the same with Monacy. People also, a little bit, dare say it, forget that Monacy in the beginning of G2, it wasn't like he was a mega-owning player in every single event from the get-go. He also had his off events, and even now, like, people label him as being inconsistent. I think it's, again, it's a bit harsh to you know, quantify a player that's been top three, top four player in the world for 3 years straight to be inconsistent, but whatever. I think it's the same for Molitor here, that there will be events, there'll be games, there'll be grand finals, there'll be like the major as well, where he will face moments where he's gonna be a bit inconsistent, where he's learning, when he's not hitting his shots. Then, you know, when you have that style of play, let's say Monedi and Molitor, where you're very fast on the trigger, well, he's going to be able to figure out, okay, I'm not having that kind of day where all those shots are hitting now. I have to change my style a little bit. I have to change my positioning a little bit. I have to give myself a bit more of a leeway, a bit more of wiggle room in order to hit some of the easier shots, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's what you only learn by experience. Like, he has to experience that. He has to experience that he cannot rely on his fast flicks and his, you know, almost like aggressive positioning with the orb every single round. Sometimes you got to dial it down a little bit. And that's a part of maturing as a player as well. So I agree with you. I don't want to be harsh on him. It's a very fair critique, let's put it that way, that had he played better in the grand final, there's a greater likelihood that Furia would have been more competitive, or maybe would have pushed it to a five maps, let alone perhaps winning it, you know. But I don't think he's the sole reason, and I don't think it's unfair to have a game like that if you're Molitor, where you're still relatively new. He still hasn't had a 12-month period of playing Counter-Strike at this level. He came in, what is it, like 9-10 months ago, the first time in Furia, so there's still plenty of time to develop, and that's where we go back to the old conversation of it's kind of the Dong and the Cyrus of the game that is ruining that, you know, process. We expect these young mega talents to come in and just be instantly godlike and never make any mistakes and never have any downfalls and never have any inconsistencies. Whereas that's what makes Dong and Saivu so fucking crazy, that they didn't have that. Whereas guys like Monacy, guys like Molodois, you know, the new Kyusuke for that matter as well, like, we gotta treat them as what they are, which is basically people of a very young age who have a very little experience playing at the highest level, but obviously have extraordinary talent. So I agree. I don't want to shit on him. I don't want to flame him. I don't think that was a good performance. And especially, as you said, the last three maps in the grand final was not okay. You know, that's had Ultimate from Team Liquid had a game like that in whatever grand final, we would have been shitting on him. But that's because that's his normal level. That's what he does most of the time. Whereas for Molitor, that was the outlier. You know, normally he's the guy who makes the difference. So I think that's a fair way of labeling that. I think it's unfortunately also going to be, as I said, why I think Furia are not going to win a lot of trophies this season. I think there's too many things that need to click at the right time for them to win trophies. You know, you have to have Yuri playing well. You have to have Molitor playing ill. You have to have Keserato, who had a great tournament, playing well. Yekinda has impressed me a lot in the beginning of the season. I will say he's been consistent. He's been delivering. He's one of the players that hasn't had a drop-off. But you look at Yuri. It's not that Yuri is bad. He's just not as good as he was at the ending of last season. You look at Molitor. He's not bad. He's just not as impactful as he was the last 3 months of last season. So for Furia to win stuff and for them to overcome a team like Vitality, or for them to even win grand finals against potential teams like Spirit, you name it, in those big pressure moments, there's too many things that have to click at the same time for me for them to win. Whereas, as we described with Vitality, well, Rob's had a very...
He's very, not through the final, mate. Yeah. Final.
Yeah, like he was just coasting.
He's chilling.
Yeah, didn't have a great game. Sorry, didn't have necessarily a bad game, but didn't have a great game by his standards whatsoever, but he wasn't really needed at any point. Whereas if Furia wants to beat Vitality, I feel all five players have to have a great game at the same time, which they had, you know, at certain tournaments last season, but it's too much to expect. So, yeah, I think that was a very fair representation of where Furia is at right now. They're still one of the best teams in the world. I'd still put them in my top three any given day, but I still think they are a team that is... I'll say it like this. I think they're further away from beating Vitality now than they were last season. And if you think that's a good development, if you're a Furia fan, then I'm sorry to tell you, that's probably not where you want to see them go.
No, the funny thing is, because they've just finished second at a prestige event and they could have made it to five, all these ifs and whatever, people are going to think, like, surely we have to change course on the Furia hate, which, by the way, notice the hate is like, the second or third best, and they might still win the odd trophy. Guys, that's not hate. That's not even vaguely hate. But also, by the way, did reality not work out? Did they win the event? Did I miss something, Furia fans? Did they win Krakow? Did Molodoy have the MVP over Z? No, they didn't, did he? That's, so reality disagrees with you. But the other reason why is I also agree sleeping. Because if you watch this tournament, I actually think, with the exception of maybe like a little moment in the semis and when they did get to the final, they also never even hit peak Fury of Fob for me. Like, mate, they were stumbling. Remember, they lost a foot to begin with. Then in the lower bracket, they were having like close games against Mongols, against fucking Astralis. Like, all these teams could, by the way, almost every series they played at this tournament, the other team could have beaten them even more ones they won. Like, it was nuts. Yeah. Like, and the other thing is, I know what you mean. I remember when this team came online at the end of last year and they were winning those lands and winning those big series over the best teams. I always told people this. It was never dominant though. They would always win like the super close games. It's actually why one thing I will give Fallen, I've never even taken this away from him, is individually, he is an absurdly clutch player. I mean, even relative to the point he is at in his career, he's supposed to be super washed at this point in time, but you still know if he's in a 1v2, he might win. He even does the thing where I do believe, much like elsewhere in the game, if you see a simple or a Ziwu on the obituary killing all your teammates, you do fucking think twice before you run around that corner because you know you're about to be in a frag movie, you know what I mean? It's the same thing when you're playing Fallen, right? I'm supposed to think it's like Chopper or Carrigan in a 1vx, like, fuck, it's going to be hard for the team to win. No, when you're on the other team, you're like, ah, shit, it's Fallen. Not only does he win these 1vx's, but he normally makes the other person look stupid. Like, fuck, where's he going to be? Was he going to be behind this box? Is he flanking me? You have to start thinking like that. So I think actually, one thing I have a theory about with teams as well is I do think actually some of the character and what the team plays like comes from either the star player or the IGL. I think that's a lot of how we do. That's why you see certain teams are super tactical. But you see some of the players go to another team, and that guy was never a genius. You just find out, oh, he just knew how to follow his role and how to play whatever they practiced in the server and what the discussion was. So one of the things about Fury is, yeah, if you let them get, like in this fight, if you let them get into a game that's like an 11-11 game or one that like they're doing a big comeback in and you're already on 10 or 11 rounds and you're going, bloody hell, are we going to get on the finish line? Yeah, those are the games Fury can beat anyone in, mate. They're fucking mega at those. The problem is, you also, as you saw in the other games, they had those maps where they just fucking got their head smashed in from the beginning of the game to the end. Yeah. And if you saw in this final, I'll tell you the most worrying sign for Fury was, bro, every single map they just started at a deficit, they would be down 0-4, 5-1. Like, I mean, even once they came back into it, Sarah, you can't just keep doing that, mate. Like, if you're Vitality, I'd rather be the one front running all the time. Like, I'm going to get some of those games over the line. Like, I know what you mean. Like, even though they've just come second, I worry that, like, look, I don't think this is normal Fury of form. They could play better than this, but if they do play like this again, mate, you're not going to win any trophies. You just aren't.
Yeah, I think that's the best way of putting it. I think that's exactly what that was at least my argument, you know, when we spoke Furia leading into the major, why I think it was more likely for them to lose in a group stage game or more likely for them to lose to an RV in a quarterfinal than a team like Falcons or Vitality that we saw, you know, dominate in group stage. Their map win percentage ratio in 2026, you know, the beginning of the season, they won 56% of their maps so far. They almost lose as many maps as they win. Yes. You know, as you said, they win the series 2-1 at Blast Bounty. They lost 2-0 to Perivision. They lost a map to Heroic, showing up with a fucking stand-in, playing as an AWPer. That's a rifle that you just bench, you know. So they're losing maps, they're losing games, and as you said, they're making every game competitive to a degree that they didn't do last season, whereas like when they were winning tournaments, it's not like Furia were outright, you know, just smashing everyone, and there was never any question of doubt whether they were going to win or not, but they were way more convincing in the way they won, and they won like significantly higher percentage of their maps. So whenever they were supposed to beat a team 2-0, they would beat them 2-0. Whenever they're supposed to win against a team 2-1 in a semi-final or in a grand final, whatever, they would do that. Whereas the beginning of the season, it's just been two tournaments, but they lost maps to Heroic, they lost two maps to Perivision, they lost a map to fucking Astralis. As you said, like, there's a lot of those games that could have gone south, you know, very, very quickly for Furious. So still, they're the second best team in the world, maybe the third best team in the world, depending on what day you ask me. But they're not as convincing, they're not playing as convincingly as they did last season. So the decrease in level per the eye test, per what you're seeing, not necessarily in the results, is already happening. So is that a slow start to the season, or was that Furia hitting their peak last season and now this is going to be the new norm for Furia, where everyone else is going to catch up to that level and then it's going to be a battle for them to even stay as the second, third, fourth best team in the world? Or will we see a Furia come alive again and find some of that form from last season? Because I agree with you. I think if you were to ask me, do Furia play, like, do they play the same quality Counter-Strike they did at the end of last season? The answer is no. And I think the players themselves and Furia themselves would say instantly, yeah, we're not playing as well as we did. So that's a sign of, you know, something happening within that lineup. That doesn't mean they can't turn it around. That doesn't mean they can't rediscover that form. But that's just where they're at right now. And I feel like that's what pisses me off the most when the fans are speaking about Furia. It's like, if you want to evaluate Furia just based on results without watching them play a game, then sure, go ahead. It's like so surface level of doing it. But if you actually watch their game, you'd agree that they just played four games at Krakow where, yes, they could have lost three of them. You know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's kind of good they win games that are competitive. It's kind of good that they win despite maybe not playing their best. You can always spin that into a positive. But I think the bad part about it is that they even bring themselves in a position where they could lose, which didn't happen the last 3 months of last season. So something has definitely changed with Inferior. They'll be fine. They'll be a top three team. But as I said, I feel more convinced now than I did a couple of weeks ago when I said it the first time that I think it's going to be tough for them to win a lot of trophies.
Right, what about obviously another team that from the Bounty people were looking down on was Team Spirit because they've just made these big high profile roster moves. By the way, I will say, we don't even have to do a section on this. This is why the most overhyped storyline, I'm sorry, of the Blast Bounty was not only like Paravision might actually be like world class. We said it on the last one, like the best case scenario is you'd be like 8th best team or 7th best team or something. You've got to be realistic. And then secondly, the idea it was like, it must be because of Zwei. He must be like, no, like by the way, he will be one of their better players, but again, that's not the reason Spirit sucks, and that's not the reason why Paravision's suddenly going to become the best. So if we go on the Team Spirit angle, I do actually feel like, I think it's a mixture of the Zwei angle where people feel like he was hard done by, and then also I think some people, funny thing, I love the way people call me a role cell, but then they themselves are like, Magic's just never been an IGL and Chopper was doing a good, oh so you believe in roles all of a sudden, fucking hell, alright mates. And by the way, all I'll say is, where are you people every year? Like at the end of every year Team Spirit wins like massive events, so then you never say Chopper's an IGL of the Year candidate. Like, I don't believe he is, mate. I think he wasn't doing most of that shit. I think it's even been revealed. I think he said something on the stream along the lines of sort of like Ali's team, basically, or something. Like, I've always thought that way. That's just from knowing like styles of IGL in, and I've always thought like that was one of those teams that suspiciously got better when they did the timeout, if you know what I mean. Like, that suggests to me they need someone else talking other than the bloody IGL. He speaks every freestyle, guys. Think about it. So I will say this. Even though I think a lot of people are disappointed because when they looked at the bracket, maybe they thought this should be the Classic Vitality Spirit in the final. We could have the Doc versus Ziwu, the start of the year. You know, I think a lot of people were primed for that one. Obviously, we didn't get it. It was a close series against Furia. I have to say, mate, I want to start with most of your thoughts, Tim. I actually thought in general, when you consider they have just made the roster, I think there's positive signs for Spirit. I kind of liked the way they played, mate. True, I'd have liked to have seen him in the final. I think that would have been a better final, maybe. But I don't really have that many complaints. I'm not that down on them. Where are you at?
No, I agree. I think, again, people underestimate how big of a change it is, you know, having Magix coming in as an in-game leader and bringing in Suntex again after a break. That's going to take time for them to get up to speed. And I think the biggest, you know, the biggest question mark is still Magix as an in-game leader. Like, is he suited for it? Is that going to be the future? Is it going to work out? I think Spirit, if you were to ask them, that's obviously a calculated gamble they make. They made the decision because they believe that that's the case. But I think they're well aware that that's going to take time, like, especially as an in-game leader. It's the same when Apex transitioned into becoming an in-game leader in the beginning. A lot of people, including myself, were like, is that going to work out? Let's see, you know, has certain qualities that could be good, has certain qualities that doesn't really strike me as being good for an in-game leader. I feel the exact same thing with Magix right here. I think we did an episode when it broke, you know, maybe a month and a half ago, where we said the same thing, where it's like, yeah, there's certain things I can see why they would think he's a good in-game leader and why that could potentially work out in terms of how you free up the team a little bit more, how you maybe cater a bit more to Donk, how you get more out of Tenere, you name it. There's also certain qualities that when I look at Magix as a personality and his way of handling stuff, and that's again, I have to distance myself because Danish Counter-Strike mentality, European Counter-Strike mentality compared to the CS region is vastly different. So yes, some of the things that I think maybe are negative in terms of personality or qualities as a player and how you conduct yourself may not be an issue in CS. But I do see certain things where I'm like, okay, you're here, you have to address it. You have to get better. You have to figure out a way of making sure that's not going to be a negative, et cetera, et cetera. So I still have my question marks surrounding Magix, so whether or not he can be he doesn't have to be a world-class in-game leader. That's the luxury of having Donk. He just has to be a decent in-game leader, like Chopper. As we said, I don't think he's a world-class in-game leader, but I think he was decent. And I think if Magix can become decent or maybe slightly better than decent, then Spirit still has everything they need in order to be a hyper-competitive team that can definitely win trophies because they have the best player to ever fucking touch the game in Donk, at least the most skilled player to ever touch the game. So in that regard, I'm not worried. I also like what I see. They look slightly better compared to Bounty, which suggests that they are getting better. They're working on stuff. And I'd say it like this, you know, if you were to ask me for the Major in Cologne, I think that's what we can fully expect to see peak Spirit. And if they fuck up that event, or if we see, you know, too much shakiness or too many bad signs or whatnot, then we can start to have a conversation. But they're one of the few teams where I like, give them some time. It's a big change. It's a new in-game leader. it's a new way of approaching the game, and it's an in-game leader that didn't come from another team as an in-game leader to a new team. It's a player that's never been in that role before, and you could clearly, you know, from the bounty, I think we saw a couple of interviews from James Banks with Magic as well, now standing behind the scenes and listening to it. You can clearly see that it's new to him. Like, he has to take responsibility in a different way, whereas before he was a support player that could get away with a 0.95 rating while Dunk went off and he'd be happy, the team would be happy, they won a trophy. Whereas this time around, he has to face the tough questions of, okay, you just lost this game in the semifinal. You're the in-game leader. What the fuck happened? You know, that's a new kind of pressure. Absolutely. That's a new kind of personality to bring out. So I agree with you. I'm not fussed up about Spirit. I don't think they're ready right now to be a world-dominating team. They're not ready to take on Vitality in a grand final in a best of five. They would have lost that game had they gotten to the grand final, I'm sure of it.
Oh, sure.
They are a team that will get to the playoff. They are a team that will be in the semifinals. And if you put Donk in a semifinal, you never know what happens.
I'll even make a little prediction on the point you were making about Magics, which is, this is also where it's not always what you say, it's actually also who you're perceived as, which is when Magics used to do the interviews because no one else wanted to speak English and things like, you know, Donk might be pissed off you lost the game or something. When Magics would do the interview, one of the things all the Zoomers love is he was always aura farming and doing troll pit. By the way, if he keeps trying to do that as an IGL when you lose, you will get mega hated, I'll tell you. That won't suddenly be as funny and it won't go down as well. Okay, I'll tell you one thing I want to ask about, which is the Donk angle, and it goes like this. People always make this weird mistake with me where they get both sides wrong. They either think if I pick something from history, usually before their time, that I'm just doing the nostalgia thing of like, things were better in my youth and, you know, you bloody, these kids have ruined the game, which one isn't even true. Like, if people don't know, it's funny that people say that I'm now being nostalgic saying Simple was the GOAT. It's like, you know, logically, guys, I shouldn't think Simple was the GOAT since I watched CS from literally the beta one. So logically, I should think Neo's the GOAT. In fact, I did for a long time, Pimp. In the early days of CSGO, until Simple came along and hit the peak, even when you had Cold Zera and you had fucking Olaf Meister and you had Get Right, these mega... I used to say, these guys are mega, but for me, I'm still going to reserve Neo as the GOAT of Counter-Strike, because the difference is, he really did have that thing that actually I've now only seen from the Zewus and the Simples, which he's just the best for like 5 straight years, mate. Like, it's like the Ronaldo Messi thing. Even if you think the other guy 1 year was better, this guy was second or third. Like, that's it. It's consistency is what's bonkers. Not even to just have your peaks. It's the idea you just never ever out of the conversation, for you are just like a goated slash best player in the world at all times. But when Simple did come along, I had to be like, look, I wasn't even thinking CSGO could ever be as good as 1.6, because I think there's more skill expression than 1.6. But you know what, this guy's just so cracked. And if you remember, that style of AWPing didn't exist, mate. Like, he really was doing like JW shit, but it just worked every round. JW shit didn't even work most of the rounds. That's why at one point in Fnatic they even said he can't even bloody AWP anymore, and he used to literally, not like a Reddit meme, main a shot on like Cobblestone, for example. Like, there's very few people ever made that style work, and this guy was like the best while doing it. So I remember thinking, I've just got to give it up, he is the best. That I have the same feeling about Donk now. So everyone who thinks you're just a simple glazer, mate, my biggest struggle with Donk is from the first kind of eats it on, I keep thinking, but how can I deny this is the best player? Like, this is just too good. Like, the real thing, like I just said there, Pimp, is not the peaks. You don't have to take his best performance. It's events like this. Mate, here's what I don't understand how he was doing, right? The analogy in English is, you say they're walking on water. It feels like what they're doing is impossible and it can't last. Mate, he's just, except for that one famous in his first year, that one Cologne where the team bombed and he had a really bad tournament, he not only does like an insanely high performance where he seems to be the best player in all the matches, bro, he does it in all the biggest events too. That's the part that doesn't make any sense to me. Even in sports, mate, there are some godlike players. People don't know, Thierry Henry fucking almost never scored in a final, if people don't know. I know it'll sound mad because he's one of the best scorers ever. There's a whole bunch of people like that, like that Ronaldo scored fuck all World Cup playoff games, you know. There's so many stats that, like, even the greatest of the great have like their element where they're human. This guy is actually the most inhuman player I've ever seen, mate. I don't understand the flaw of his game. It makes no sense. And then when I look at his role in the game, you can say that thing all day long that people do of like, well, Nero changed their rating to favor aggressive. It doesn't matter. Here's the question, guys: where the fuck are the other aggressive riflers? Where is Exertion in that conversation? Where is Zantares in the GOAT player? None of them are even in the discussion. It's just Donk on his own and all the bloody Harpers. It's fucking nuts. If anything, you can even argue, by the way, that the Zebras and the Monsies, because they can rifle an Harper, do whatever, they're not doing the Molitor like we just said. They can actually move around when they're having a bad game. Donk has to just keep doing his shit, mate. Like, I have literally, this is the most like alien player I've ever seen in CS. I've never seen anyone do this. And part of me almost like wishes he drops off and just goes shit for 6 months. So it'll feel like, right, phew, finally that makes sense. Because this makes no sense, mate. He's too good.
It's the thing that he's immune to whatever's around him.
You know? I know.
Because he's equally good to a spirit, you know, that's been together for a year where everything is working, yes. Everyone knows each other, compared to a spirit with a new in-game leader and, you know, Sway next to him and then Tenere next. Like, it doesn't matter who you put next to him. It doesn't matter what you put him in. It doesn't matter what environment he is in. He's just going to do his thing at an extremely high level. I bet you this much, you know, if Vitality were to change two players all of a sudden and or Saibu would get a new in-game leader, let's say Apex decided to retire tomorrow, like, his level would drop, you know. Saibu is a player that is... He's obviously fantastic and he's going to do great, but there will be a slight drop off, I'm quite sure, you know, if he's not comfortable in the people around him. It does seem like Donk is immune to that. And that's like to me, that's the one skill set I never figured out as a player. That's the one skill set Elise has never figured out as a player. That's the one skill set I think most pro players, when you look over the course of 5 years of their career, they're going to like, why am I so affected by what's... I wish I could just play equally good, you know, depending on what's going on. You know, I don't care if it's Sipnix next to me or if it's fucking Bobski next to me back in the Astralis days. I'm sure Dupuy would be like, yeah, I'm going to play equally good in every single game. But that's just that's not how it's working. You know, you see it in football all the time. Fucking Anthony from Manchester United, you know, how awful he was in United, goes to Real Betis, and all of a sudden he looks like a superstar again, you know. It's not that the player all of a sudden gets 50% better. It's just that he's in an environment that he's more fit to play in. And there's so many players who just can't seem to figure out, you know, that this environment doesn't work for me or that environment doesn't work for me, but this very stable Real Betis where I'm the star, that works for me, you know, whereas Donk is immune to that. And I don't think you can name five players. I can't name five players in history of Counter-Strike who could do that. I think Simple is the one that comes closest to that. Yep. And maybe you'd argue they're similar in that regard, that it doesn't matter who they play with, where they play, and how they play. Nobody else would do that. Not even the Saibu, not even the fucking peak Cold Sera. Great example. You know, he needed that system to be good. Peak fucking device for that matter, you know, system player, whatever you want to call him. Donk is immune to that. And if that's not the greatest skill you can have as a player, that you can be thrown into whatever mix you want to, then I don't know. That's like the one thing I wish I could do, because then you're gonna be relevant no matter where you go, no matter when you play, and no matter how you come back. It's crazy. I agree.
You know, one thing you're backing into here as well, look, it's a classic angle to go on these plebs with, is the new cope from all the Zebu fans isn't just he's better. It's the thing of like, but Donk just has the whole team based around him. Like, they just changed the whole fucking structure of the calling, guys. He just does it. Like, at this point in time, I don't know what they think. I'd love for one of these guys, just get me a demo. They can do this, by just get me a demo, get me some Skybox Edge. Just show me what they're doing that's making him get these kills. Because I always want to tell this, like, If that was real, right, if it's setting him up that makes him this good, then every other team with an aggressive rifle is a moron for not doing this. Like, why doesn't Aurora just do this and make his Antares get even more? I don't know what they mean by that, mate. And listen, he certainly is like the tip of the spear or whatever, but there's so much more to it than that. Like, loads of it's coming out of his crosshair, not the fucking mind of Chopper or Magics, for fuck's sake.
True. I have one thing I want to hear your take on, actually, because that's the most puzzling for me and the most annoying one. You remember we spoke about Mouse last time, and you got a pretty strong, you know, take on Mouse. Did anything you see in Krakow change your mind? Do you, as me, feel that it's just more of the fucking same?
Like, this is why I hate on them, bro, because here's the problem, right? I'll tell you the difference. This is the key difference between Mouse and Falcons, because both teams, like, underwhelm and don't do as well in the last match of the tournament every time. But the difference is, you do feel when you watch Falcons and they hit all the crazy shots, like, that's part of the aura that people... It's not really just the whole thing of they don't look cool in interviews. It's the idea that in the game, they feel dangerous, you know what I mean? The problem Mouse has is every time they play someone below them, they're like accountants. They just run the numbers and then they just beat them because they should. And then when they get to the big game every time, this is the worst part, Pim. It's not just that they lose. You can lose. In fact, I actually thought last season they did this less than they love doing it now. Last season they could lose to Vitality, but really close, and give them a great game and just lose, because you know what? At the end of the day, like people like Team Liquid or old TSM back in the day, you're going to have to sit back and just go, that was the greatest team of all time, and unfortunately I was playing them. Yeah, you can't win many of those when you're playing the GOATs. The difference is, like this one that they had in this match here, right? when I look who they beat, they didn't beat any massive names for me. And then when I look how they lost, they play a part in their losses, Pim. That's the choking element. They don't just lose like in the same way as Fury lost on those big maps there. They also, like, you do see people each time, like, they look like they've lost the game after the first half, or you see them go down in that first match. You just don't ever believe. You don't always get the comms, but if you could hear all the between the maps, between the court, I just don't know, like, you wouldn't buy it in their voice. Whatever, even if they say, guys, we can come back and we can win the next match. Remember, we did that. You'd be like, you're trying to convince yourself of that. You know what I mean? So my problem is, yeah, I think I think I've nailed it there. It's not that, like, the joke is they could actually play us as well as the Falcons in a tournament. But the difference is, I'll always feel like Falcons have, like, a danger element that I just don't feel for Mouse. Mouse just feel like they play good CS with good players in the roles. The collective level's pretty good. By the way, the consistency impresses the fuck out of me. That part, I have a lot of props for. Yeah. The problem is, they're also the team that's almost the most guaranteed to make top four and then not win the fucking tournament. And that is what's not sexy, mate. That's where the aura's missing, you know. Because the joke is, they've gone now, but even that bloody Mongols team by the end had a danger to them. Like, they could still fuck around and play that style and get a win over a bunch of You never feel that with Mouse for me. It's why even it'll look like I hate them because they came top four, but I am hating on them. Like, I'm sort of a bit bored of that front. I genuinely wish, even if it risks getting worse, that you do a gamble to get better. Even if, like I say, you fuck up and you end up making a bunch of ninth place, I'd rather you do the gamble and sort of swing for the fences, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what I've come to as well, you know, and that's what we discussed last time around, because I agree, like, the consistency coming out of Mouse and them constantly making playoffs and getting, it's not only making the playoff, you know, they also quite consistently get into the semifinals and occasionally the grand finals as well, which in itself is mega impressive. And I also will say that, you know, if I just distance myself away from it, I look at the Mouse lineup and I think to myself, is this a team, you know, player for player, pound for pound, that's supposed to be better than third best, fourth best, fifth best in the world?
No.
Probably not. So they're kind of they're kind of matching expectations and sometimes exceeding them. It's just that they've been doing the same thing now for, as you said, you know, 15 months. So I would rather see if, okay, now that you've proven that you could be, you know, outside of Vitality, the most consistent team in the world, that's also part of the story. I think that whole storyline surrounding Mouse would be so much sweeter for them if Vitality didn't exist right now, because they essentially would be the most consistent team in the world, which is impressive in its own way. But as you said, it just gets boring because there's never more to it. So I would also say, you know, please take the gamble. You know, if you risk maybe becoming fifth, sixth, seventh, or you miss a couple of playoffs, if that enables you to potentially feel, as you said, feel more dangerous on the server, or feel you have a better chance of finally getting the big trophy, then I think we're coming to a time now where that's worth it. I guarantee you, they've had those conversations during the player break as well. They probably come to the conclusion that let's give it one more chance. Let's change a few things and maybe we can get over the hurdle. But I will also bet you this is the last chance they have as a unit together. The players will also grow tired of it. The coaching staff grows tired of it. The organization is like, okay, we tried, you know, and it's not that anyone is to blame. As said, I think it's more than respectable and it's more than okay what they're delivering. It's just, if we ever want to take a step further, which they have voiced publicly saying that we want to be a team that is winning trophies, then you got to, at some point, you know, count your losses and try something else. And I think that's where Mouse is. If anything, they just confirmed what I felt, you know, at this tournament, that they're still a world-class team. They're still good, but they're never any closer to the trophies. And I think you nailed it by saying that, you know, it's that dangerous element on the servers. Like, when you're, I don't know, it's I hate, we maybe do too many football references. Whenever I watch Atletico Madrid, you know, in La Liga, you know, in a sense, like, that's a tactical, well-sound team. They don't ever feel as dangerous as Real Madrid.
Sure. You know,
despite of whatever matchup it is, despite of it being a season where Atletico Madrid is leading La Liga and they'll end up winning it, they never feel as dangerous in the big games because they don't have the same individual quality. And the same could be said in this scenario as well. And I think the best way to exemplify that from Krakow is, we just spoke about Furia. In every single game for Furia in that lower bracket, it was 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. And you'd say they came into the playoff a bit weaker than Mouse. But I bet you everyone would agree and everyone would see, like, gut feeling-wise, Furia is going to make the final ahead of Mouse. We have a better feeling that Furia is going to be dangerous in the playoff. Whereas for Mouse, they did lose that one game to Aurora 2-0, I think. But then they beat FaZe 2-0. They beat Falcons 2-0. They beat D2 2-0. So you'd say, coming into the semifinal, you just won six maps in a row against some quality opponents. So yeah, they should feel more dangerous. They should be more dangerous than a Furia, who in every single game have struggled a little bit. But that's never the notion. That's never the sense, because we know that Furia is a more dangerous team than Mouse. So it goes to say two things. I agree with your point that they don't have that, you know, they don't have that player that makes you fear them all of a sudden popping off. And second of all, I also think that's why people and especially fans, you know, sometimes overestimate the fact that a 2-1 is not really different from a 2-0 victory as long as you get the win. Yeah, sure, there's certain things in the way you lose a map or the way you play that is a bit concerning for Furia, but at the end of the day, I think Furia, you know, coming into the playoff was still a more dangerous team to me, despite them having lost 3 maps in the way into it. Whereas for Mouse, they just won 3 games in a row, 2-0, 2-0, 2-0. Still didn't give me any confidence that they were going to be more dangerous against Vitality. So it's all about context in that regard. And, you know, results in terms of how you win does not matter as much as you probably would like them to, as long as you get the win, which Furia have been quite good at, and Mouse, unfortunately, not.
I also agree on the whole player angle. Even though true, I have been saying this for 3 straight off seasons, but to be fair, I also didn't know how VRS would affect people not wanting to do one-off signings, etc. The other reason why I feel like it's inevitable, that the joke is it won't even be that Mouse will fall. Eventually, one of these players is just going to go, you know what, I actually am bored of losing like this. Essentially, what they will do is they will do the Rops to Vitality move, Pimp, because what happens is, Rops, remember, was the best player in FaZe for most of history. He wasn't at the very end, but he'd been their like main player that was the one that you could sort of rely on, and even he said it's real, I've talked to him behind the scenes, he did just want FaZe to sign more firepower. If they could have gotten another star, then he'd be like, right, we can still make this work, etc. But I think what he realized was when FaZe went off the boil a little bit and they themselves were just like, you know, can make the playoffs but they're not going to win the tournament, I think he realized like, but I'm not Zewu or fucking Monacy or Donk, like I can't do it all myself, so like essentially I need to get to like a team with a player like that, that's how I win everything. So the same thing, if I'm sitting down, if I'm any of them, maybe not Torji because he's the one who signed the long term contract, but if I am the other, like if I am Sphinx, if I am fucking Xertion, I'm thinking, look, I am really good, like I can be a top 10 player in the world, I can mix up with all the other players, but I can't really like do what Donk and these other people do where they're just constantly carrying them. It's like I have to get to one of those teams, I have to go and play with someone like that. If I do, don't I just win every, don't I get to do what Rups is doing now, like I get to win, I get to have an off final and win a fucking game. Yep. Like, so I know what you mean, sooner or later it's going to click with these players. I also don't believe that as well, in the same way as I said earlier, you can have players who are either tactical or clutch. And it's sort of like a bit of that DNA spreads around the team while you're like almost like some aura effect in fucking in like a trading card game or video game. Like in the same way as you can have that, I also do feel like in a team like this, people are going to think they're all bloody losers and chokers. Like we don't actually know that. If you split them up and you put them in other teams, maybe some of these guys don't even have that problem. And I feel like that is the most, that's why people say a change of scenery is what changes things, yeah, isn't yeah, it? Like yeah. I feel like a bunch of these players all of a sudden, like the obvious examples for me, it's never happened. And sadly was you always want Carrigan to go to Mouse. I always want these players to go to fucking Carrigan in FaZe. Like I want to see, yeah, you know, like Xertion play with Twists, mate. I think you would tear the team side up. Like wouldn't you and Carrigan have the best time of ever, you know what I mean? These are the moves I want to see because I feel like they could like bring something new to these teams.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just thinking, you know, to give you a best football manager example right here. If you're Sphinx as an example, you know, he's kind of often, you know, singled out for having like this passive aggressive play style, yes, where he's a little bit annoying, you know. But imagine a rifling trio. I think they would complement each other very well with Frozen, Twist, and Sphinx. You know, if you cannot make that work, if you're Kerrigan, then sure, you have the Brokey issue. That's another sure side of the coin, and maybe you get a better Arbor, you know, at that point. But sometimes all it takes is just one or two moves, and then we go from speaking about FaZe being a potential dead, yes, team to a team that if you have Frozen, you have Twist, you have Sphinx, you have Kerrigan as an in-game leader, and let's say that there's an AWP player out there that's better than Brokey, or even Rid Brokey, you know. Maybe the change of scenery or the fact that Brokey realizes, hey, if I get my shit together, I may play on one of the best teams in the world again. Maybe that could be enough, you know. So I very much agree with that. I think there's always going to be that lingering feeling in the back of the mind within the Mouse players that if this doesn't work out this time around, if I don't leave first, or if I don't secure a move to a better team first, then someone else will. And yeah, I know, yeah, that obviously they're very close, it's a brotherhood, but that's... that's the name of the game, you know. Absolutely. Fans hate it because, yeah, everyone is so friendly and they've been together. They grew up in the academies together. It's like, at the end of the day, it's a business. At the end of the day, it's a short career. And at the end of the day, you want to make the most out of it. And if you want to be the best of the best of the best, hard decisions will have to be made at some point. And I'm sure that one of those Mouse players eventually will go, as you said, described it, go secure a move somewhere else. Whether that's to a better team or to an equal team with better pay, who cares, you know. Players will always look out for themselves first and foremost. And I think that's... that's, again, something fans will have to fucking understand eventually, you know, that players at the end of the day, fuck your fucking club loyalty. Absolutely. You know, fuck the shit that you've been in Mouse for 4 years, you should stay there for the rest of your career, it's your family, it's your home, yes, show the badge amount. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, if you're a player, you look out for your best interest. And if your best interest is to stay in Mouse for the entirety of your career, go ahead, do it by all means. But expecting, you know, expecting that fans have, I say, I hate this from the football terms as well, you know, but fans expecting that you should be more loyal to your club, or you should be more loyal to your players, or more loyal to those who showed you're loyal. Like, at the end of the day, everything in the world, you see it in your own ways of living as well. You got to take care of yourself before you take care of everyone else, you know. It opens up I think that's a life advice for you out there. You take care of your own body. You take care of yourself. It also opens up for the fact that then you have way more energy, way more capacity to take care of everyone else and be the person you want to be. Whereas if you're miserable, then you're going to be miserable around everyone else. It's the same philosophy, I feel like, for players as well. You take care of yourself. You make sure you're happy with what you get paid, where you play, and then you'll be the best possible teammate and the best possible player you can be.